Flavor Napa Valley. Essentially, the Napa Valley Food and Wine Festival recently concluded with 33 chefs participating. Of those 33 chefs, none of them were women. And yet, women have a growing place in the world of restaurants and chefs. We're going to talk about that today with my guest, Charlotte Druckerman. She's a journalist whose food writing has appeared in numerous publications, including the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. And she's the author of a new book titled Skirt Steak, Women Chefs on Standing the Heat and Staying in the Kitchen. Charlotte Druckerman, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Wow, 33 and no women.
33 and no women.
Nicely done over there, Napa.
But yet you found 70-plus that you interviewed for Skirt Steak.
Oh, yeah, and I could have kept going easily, but I had a book to write, and there was a deliberate way in which I wanted to write it, and so it would have become unwieldy if I'd kept on going. It was already a little hard at that number.
Tell us a little bit about how you put this together, because it is what you kind of refer to as a collective memoir.
Yeah, it's, I wanted to change things a little bit. I mean, there have been books and articles written that get much more into statistics, and those will take a really clinical look at the world of the restaurant industry and the breakdown of chefs and things like ethnicity and gender. And then there are the books that are usually left to men to write, which are the kind of gutsy tell-all memoir that's really raw and raunchy. I think Tony Bourdain was probably the first to turn that into some kind of a template to be followed, and which was great. You finally had Gabrielle Hamilton writing hers last year, which was so beautifully written. And tapped into that a little bit, but I still think was pretty distinct in its own right. So what I wanted to do was get all of these women together to tell their stories and to have these conversations where the reader felt like they, too, were having the conversation or somehow in on it, so that you took away the clinical part, but then you also stopped being in that defensive place that was about where are all the women, why are there none of you. I wanted to just say, you know what, this is a norm. It might not be the majority, but it's a norm. And so if you treat it like a norm and then let all of these chefs speak about their experiences, then yes, hopefully you will get something that is like a collective memoir.
One of the distinctions that you make, though, is between those that are excellent home cooks, for example, and chefs, and how you define that. Talk a little bit about that, Charlotte.
Well, I think it's one of the things that emerged, which I wasn't expecting, and then I think became the most interesting question for me, was just asking the women to define the word chef, because no one had the same answer. And it's become something very complicated because, I guess, as Christina Tosi said, you know, it can now be a lifestyle or a brand. So you have that original idea of a chef being someone who has mastered a craft or a trade. And then now you have this idea of a chef who is a celebrity and who owns multiple restaurants and who's written cookbooks. And so, you know, just figuring out where you're going to fall in that, I think, is a challenge enough. But the other problem with that is that there's been all this inflation with this idea of what it means to cook professionally and then also what it just means to be really excited about cooking. A lot of people who watch the Food Network and maybe watch, you know, someone like Giada De Laurentiis in her kitchen, and, you know, she is a trained professional cook. She's a caterer, and I mean, I think you could probably say that she was a chef if you were more loosely defining it, just to give you an example, right? Or maybe a Rachel Ray, who is not a chef, but who is perceived as a chef because of her position in the food industry. It's very easy to look at someone like Rachel Ray and say, hey, I'm a great home cook. I like to do what she's doing, too. I guess I'm a chef. Or for someone to say, I'm taking lessons at culinary school as a hobby, I guess I'm a chef too. But what that does is it takes people who are actual chefs and it kind of takes away from what they're doing. So it does seem like semantics, I know, except it's not when it's hard enough just to define what the word means when it is being carried out on a professional level.
To what extent did somebody like Julia Childs help define these terms and really set the standard by which you're talking about now.
Well, I think, I hate to say this, but I think Julia screwed things up a lot for women on that front. I mean, mm-hmm. not at all. She didn't screw things up for cooking. She didn't screw things up for you know, people at home cooking better. And she certainly didn't screw things up for the legacy of French food in the United States or for television personalities who were culinary professionals. But you can't call Julia Child a chef in the sense that it's being defined in the book or in the restaurant industry. We're talking about restaurant chefs. Julia Child was not a restaurant chef. Anytime you say you're writing a book about women chefs, people say, oh, Julia Child must have mm-hmm. heard of your book. And this does go back to that whole thing where there's a difference between being a great home cook or even a professional person who talks about cooking at home, right, and being a chef in a restaurant. And for men, this seems to be less of a problem. If a man says, I am a chef, people assume he's in a restaurant. If a woman says, I am a chef, people think she's a Julia Child, but those are two very different things. So when I say that Julia's done a disservice, I don't mean in general, I mean specifically to women who work in the restaurant industry in those galleys.
How much of this is also defined by the competitive nature of chefs and restaurants today and the way celebrity has become so much a part of it and how we have defined restaurants really by the chef more than the restaurant now?
Well, yeah, that's happened too. I mean, I think actually what that has done, which is going to sound like I'm contradicting myself here, but I think that's actually tarnished the word cook. If you're going back to what it means to be these things in an industry. Because yes, there's a home cook, but then there's also the job of being a cook on the line, which, you know, if you're looking at this as a craft that you master, you spend a lot of time and a lot of years on the line perfecting different jobs on that line, you know, starting with something like a garde-manger and going up to being a saucier. And at each of those stops, you are perfecting and honing, and you are repeating these skills over and over. And then finally, if you do that well, you become the manager of that whole team on the line, putting out a meal every night. And because of this whole celebrity thing and because of this idea that, you know, the chef is the restaurant, there's this idea that to become a professional person who cooks in a restaurant, the only answer is to be a chef, and that it happens overnight because you see it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all these people coming out of culinary school calling themselves chefs, and a lot of the nobility of being a professional cook has been diminished. I'm not really sure if that's what you were asking, but just to keep in that conversation of terms and what it means to become a chef, I think it's relevant.
Beyond the celebrity side, the other template that you talk about is really the French template and how that has not been helpful to women.
No, that has not been helpful structurally because it was a place that only allowed men traditionally. In France, you know, women weren't allowed to be in that space. And now they're allowed, but you still don't see too many of them in there, or you don't see them being welcome in there. And it's also just, for anyone, a difficult place to be ergonomically or physically, right? It's, you know, it's run like a military brigade, which makes it highly functional in a way, as long as that's a system that you can afford to have. If you can afford to have all of those people in all of those positions handling all of that equipment, then it works beautifully. But if you look at what we have today in the restaurant industry, which are a lot of smaller independent restaurants that are sometimes more eccentric or sometimes these kind of, I would call them a gentrified ideas of the mom and pop, you don't have the kind of setup that would even allow that brigade system. So if you take the gender part out of it, it's become a little bit irrelevant. But then certainly for women, if that's the institution you're basing your restaurant on ideologically, then it's chauvinistic from the start.
Tell us a little bit about some of the women that you talk to and how they're looking at these various contradictions and issues that we've been discussing.
You know, it's funny. There is almost this generational divide that I noticed. I mean, it wasn't that clear cut, but I started to see almost three different generations emerging. You had the women who really were coming of age in the late 70s and the 1980s, who had maybe studied in Europe or were studying under European chefs in America, or chefs who had trained in Europe and then come over here. And they were very much initiated into that French-style system, and they just had to deal with it. And I think because they were the first to do it, they didn't necessarily think so much about the fact that they were doing it. They just did it, right? And then you had that second generation, and I think they're generally a more self-conscious, almost if you're looking at it in some kind of growth phase. The second generation is kind of that adolescent stage of the culinary restaurant industry, and in the development of what it means to be a chef. So that second generation has to be the most adaptable, and they were also the ones who were able to start looking around probably and asking questions, because they could look at women who had come before them, like Susan Feniger and Mary Sue Milliken, and had gone through that French system, figured it out, and then gone out on their own and built something new, or they could go back to those French-style kitchens and see how chauvinist they were. So there's that. They were kind of looking around and seeing that there were other ways to do things, but that the norm was still pretty harsh for women. Mm-hmm. But then they are also those same chefs who came of age at the same time that the celebrity chef was becoming a phenomenon. So they also had to start thinking about what they wanted to do with their careers and how they were going to become successful in ways that chefs who came before them had never done. And then you have the third generation, who are the women who are, you know, coming of age now. And they're looking at something very different. They're looking at a lot of different options. So for them, the challenge is navigating those options. But in terms of dealing with that original French system and the bias behind it, it's a lot easier to turn a blind eye to it now, because so many women have come and gone through it, and because there's so many other kitchens that don't look like that.
And then there's the ones that came up through the pastry chef route, which is a whole interesting twist.
Yeah. You know, for me, I take that stuff personally because I'm such a big pastry fan as an eater, and it's also made me want to write more about it. And I think that they are underrepresented and underappreciated, because what they're doing is such an art. And I don't want to say that savory cooking isn't, but this is, if you want to look at it as you would in the medical profession or in another profession that has real specialties, the pastry chefs are the specialists of you know, the back of house. And in France, what I find so ironic is that we did borrow this idea of what a restaurant is from the French, and this idea of what fine dining is, and just the way that the kitchen should be set up. We stole all of that from France, and we don't deny that. But strangely enough, the final frontier in France for women is pastry. Pastry was considered the most special, rarefied place in the professional kitchen, and it's where women were not allowed at all. And it's still really, really hard to find female pastry chefs in France. I mean, if you start thinking of the great pastry chefs in France, I don't think you can come up with one. I think there's one woman right now in Paris who has her own pastry shop who's kind of taken seriously, but if you're looking at the list, the sort of top pastry chefs list, she's nowhere on it, and she hasn't had that kind of experience or exposure. So it really is the last place for women to break through in that world. But here, it's where all the women got shunted. So it's the one glaring anomaly. And so pastry has become this very effeminized area, and it gets short shrift, but the kind of work that they're doing is possibly the most meticulous. And it's also, ironically, the most steeped in science, which could be said of something like avant-garde cooking or molecular gastronomy, if that's what you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And that gets considered very male, right? But pastry, not at all. Pastry, everyone thinks it's like you're going into your Easy Bake Oven and pulling out some brownies.
To what extent has mentoring played a role among women chefs?
Well, I think the women who have had mentors have had great mentors have benefited so greatly from that and talk about it, about how wonderful it is. But it doesn't carry across so well. I think that it would be better to see more mentoring happen for women by either male or female chefs, but certainly it would be nice to see it starting, you know, in our own backyard, to see more women mentoring each other. I think that that's one thing that we haven't had enough of and that maybe men have been better about doing for each other. But then again, too, there's so many more of them there to mentor each other, and maybe there's a feeling of them not being in competition with each other as much because there's so many of them that they don't have to worry about fighting for a place because of the fact that they're men. And I think women sometimes tend to feel that they do have to compete for the token female slot. So I think that that's possibly what's prohibited mentoring in the past among women, and I'd like to see that change, and I do think it is. I'm actually pretty optimistic about that.
Talk about some of the early pioneers, people like Alice Waters and Judy Rogers, and what they contributed to this.
They contributed so much, and I think actually what they contributed transcends gender. I think they contributed this, that the idea of, which I've been saying lately, and I haven't done any official research on this, so it's a working theory, but I'm feeling good about it. You know, for a very long time, we had, in terms of the typical restaurant, you had the fine dining French restaurant, and then some of the kind of trickle-down versions of that. And then you have the fast food restaurant. People think it's an oxymoron to even call that a restaurant. And then you have the small, what I guess you would call ethnic or mom-and-pop restaurants. And then in the late 90s and mostly in the 2000s, you've seen the development of, in terms of trends especially, the small chef-driven restaurant, the kind of indie restaurant. And those are the restaurants that are now getting the most attention and probably the most successful. And I think women were the pioneers of those restaurants, and I think that they were almost by necessity, because if you wanted to really get ahead and make a name for yourself or just be the boss, it was very hard to do that in those French-style restaurants where you weren't allowed to reach a certain level in the kitchen and you weren't being promoted or you just weren't being welcome at all. So the answer would be to open your own restaurant. That's the only way to have any kind of agency, right? Would be to be your own boss and do it yourself. And if you were going to do that and you were doing it yourself, it's probably going to be pretty scrappy in terms of the kind of money or backing you had. And so you see women taking over or buying these smaller restaurants and then really just making them their own. And I think Alice Waters and Judy Rogers are not just pioneers as women becoming icons within the industry for other women to look up to, but I think that they're people to look up to in terms of setting up that model of what the small chef-driven restaurant looks like.
What has been the relationship between some of these up-and-coming women chefs and male chefs? I mean, is there a competition? Is there a threat? Or is there a positive relationship with respect to the larger business?
I think that there's a positive relationship. I mean, I think for women, the question is more about getting the kind of street cred, especially in the media, that men get, and that means getting the same kind of, the same kind of treatment, you know, being given the same amount of press, but also the same kinds of attention, because I think that there's that idea that now chefs are really cool, but the cool chef is very male, I guess, in the characteristics, that the badass, rebel, tattooed, that has become such a touchstone of what a chef with a capital C is when you're looking at what the media puts out there and what the public is seeing as a chef. And that just doesn't work so well if you're a woman. It's hard to be that. And so I don't think among the chefs themselves that there's a feeling of, watch your back competition. I think that there's actually room for everyone. But I just think that I put myself in that group because I'm part of the media. we just tend to give more credit and a different type of credit to the men.
And where does something like Food Network fall in this equation?
Oh, the Food Network's not doing so well on that score. Sorry, dear Food Network. The Food Network, you know, if you watch the Food Network, it's very clear how they're marketing things. So during the day, it's very much the, like, stay at home and cook. And what you see is you see women hosting shows, and either those women are professional home cook types who have shows, or they are, in fact, chefs, restaurant chefs, proven talented chefs, at home, in their kitchens, in their pedestrian home clothes, cooking food for home cooks to help them along. And then at night, ooh, guess what happens at night? Then it becomes serious macho chef time, where you're either seeing men competing against each other in their chef whites, and they're really being taken seriously as professionals, or you're seeing more shows about the restaurant industry and men chefs, or you're just seeing these very kind of, like, you know, throw down kinds of competitions that, again, tend to be mostly dominated by men, unless it's pastry. And then, again, you're not even seeing serious pastry artwork being done. You're just seeing cupcake wars. And that's, again, where you'll find more women.
What should we be looking for in terms of ongoing trends in this area, do you think?
I would like to think that there are more people out there like me who are just looking at it and asking questions, but also trying to ask different questions, and that we're not having the same conversations. I think one of the reasons I really wanted to write the book and to write it this way was that I didn't want to have the defensive conversation where we start out by asking, where are all the women? Or why do you all leave to go have babies? Or don't you feel bad that there, you know, that there's so few of you? I just think that that's such a bad place to come from, because it assumes already a lesser position. And there are so many more women out there doing this now. And of course, I'm not going to pretend that we're at some kind of 50-50 ratio, but we're not. But we're so much farther along from where we used to be. And I think especially if you start looking on the lines right now, not even at the people in charge, but at who's coming up in the ranks, you're seeing more and more women. And you're seeing more opportunities for women to make inroads in this industry. And so I'm hoping, and I do believe it's going to happen, that we're going to just start having more conversations and channels for expression where we can talk about what women are doing and their successes in terms of having to go back to these arcane conversations that look at the kind of woe is me, I'm a woman in this industry and it's so hard, you know, that I'm tired of that.
And to your broader point with Skirt Steak, that this whole conversation becomes a bigger metaphor for a whole bunch of other gender issues being discussed within the context of food.
Yes, yes, and I want to say even more than that, you could have this conversation about the food industry, not just about gender. You could start looking at things like ethnicity and race as well. You could also say that you could apply these kinds of conversations to other industries too, and that's kind of what I wanted the book to become, a template or a jumping-off point, just for another way. And you know, there's no perfect way to talk about anything, obviously, so there are always going to be flaws in whatever system you devise. But I think to constantly try and ask new questions is really, really important to change the conversation and to engage people differently. That means the people you're interviewing, but then also your readers. I think that that's very important, and I would like to see that continue happening, and not just in the food industry, although, of course, that's the industry that's closest to my heart.
Charlotte Druckman, the book is Skirt Steak, Women Chefs on Standing the Heat and Staying in the Kitchen. It's just out from Chronicle Books. Charlotte, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate it.